Tothersall's kickoff. This is Radio City Talk.
8:45. Let's talk Everton for the next 15 minutes with Pet from the Blue Room and Dave Downey as well. Hello, gents.
Good morning.
Pet, I was talking about Holland an hour ago with Mark Quayle because he's off to watch Ajax v Feyenoord. And I didn't realise it was quite the match or quite the occasion. And he was telling me it's one of the most renowned matches for trouble. And then Robbie texted me and he said it's the worst derby in Holland. All away fans banned. But still big trouble there. Are you aware of this?
Yeah, I've been aware of, you know, the two big derbies they have in Holland is them and the one and Rotterdam as well. So it's PSV and that one as well. And yeah, there's a few things that go on there that go on a bit unnoticed.
Yeah, well, it just leads me on, sort of completely unconnected, to Everton's link to the Ajax wonder kid Kasper Dolberg this morning. Completely unconnected. Yeah. I was just wondering whether you'd heard about that that relationship between those clubs. But Kasper Dolberg is the man who's in the headlines this morning. He's an Ajax wonder kid who shot to the top of the Eredivisie goal-scoring charts at the weekend. Now, he's been linked with Everton today, strongly linked. He scored an 18-minute hat-trick against NEC. I don't know how you say the name of this club. Nyamgang, something like that. NEC, I think we'll just call them. 19-year-old striker. He's scoring a rate of one goal every 100 minutes in his first full season with the Ajax first team, netting 8 times in 12 league games. His audacity included a backwards header from 12 yards out, which is probably why Everton are interested in, but probably why other clubs as well are interested in. Should Everton be targeting youth at this stage in terms of players they bring in?
Definitely, yeah. I think the only problem with this kid is, and any Dutch player you buy, it's very hard to know what you're getting because the league has produced players like
Suarez.
Van Nistelrooy, Suarez. We've seen players like the original
Ryan Babel.
The original Ronaldo, yeah. And then you get the flip side and you get players
Andy
like
Van der Meijden.
Good player, just under circumstances. But then you get players like Janssen for Spurs, right, who last season was the big thing in Holland.
So you can get a bit of everything from Holland, can't you?
And he's clearly rubbish, so
you can get a mixed bag, can't you? It's like a goodie bag that you don't know what you're going to get out of it, David, isn't it?
Like a pack of football stickers, isn't it? You'll get a few that you don't want and you've had a few times, and then you'll get one that's a shiny one and you want to keep.
You know, we're so critical of other leagues, though, aren't we? Everyone goes in, and you're quite defensive of the MLS, but everyone goes, oh, the MLS, you couldn't have an MLS player in England. But you get that with Holland as well, don't you? Mm. Oh, the Dutch league, they can't be good enough to come from there to here.
Far too precious over here, aren't we?
About, oh, I think so, players, isn't it?
But that's why it's such a juggernaut in terms of cash, because we tell people it's the best, so people believe it's the best when it's not really the best, is it?
Mm. Well, I don't know whether this like Kasper Dolberg's whether it's just plucked out of the air or
what. I think he's clearly their like number one player at the moment. And you look at someone like Eriksen at Spurs. You know, you can get these great players coming out of Holland. It just really is, I think, how they settle in. I think they've all got the talent. Mm. Clearly, cause the Dutch. It's not like the Dutch league's got any worse. It's always been one of those second-class leagues, I'd say, in Europe. It's just whether those players...
It's a second-class league.
Well, I think it's a second-class. It's not one of the top...
In the same as Ligue 1?
It's not
or
one
is
of...
it, or is it below Ligue 1?
It's not one of the top five leagues, is it, really, in Europe? It's probably the sixth or sixth. It's like the Belgian league, or maybe even probably Scottish...
And yet you say the name Ajax, and you go, oh, they must be brilliant.
Mm. Well, they're one of the best clubs in the world for producing players. It's as simple as that. Or players sort of going through there as their entry into Europe as well. Or their first big step as well, because you've got players like Zlatan as well who played for them. It's almost where players leave smaller clubs, go to Ajax, get experience of playing for a top team in their league and also getting a chance to play in Champions League or Europa League. And it's almost their first step into the big time. So, as I say, it's very hard to know whether a player who plays there will make it, but I suppose you've just got to scout them really well and take the chance.
Steve Hothersall's kickoff. This is Radio City Talk.
This is Radio City Talk. I'm Steve Hothersall. Okay, let's have a look at boxing. And this week we saw announced the next opponent for Callum Smith. So he will defend his British super middleweight title against the mandatory challenger Luke Blackledge. That'll be at the Manchester Arena on December the 10th. Big bill indeed. Of course, still that world title fight yet to come for him. Surely it's not far around the corner. Let's have a chat with Callum now. Morning, Callum.
Morning, mate. How are you?
Great. Thanks for joining me. So December the 10th, it's not far away. What do you know about your opponent? Is he a good challenger? Is he a mandatory challenger?
Yeah, he's a mandatory challenger, so I think he's earned that right to be there. He's had some good wins. He's a good, you know, strong fighter to come forward. You know, he's known for having a good work rate, so he'll work hard, and it's a big opportunity for him. So I think I'll get, you know, the best performance from him. So, you know, I can't afford no slip-ups. I believe I'm good enough to win a world title, and, you know, if I'm as good as I think I am, then I should be good enough to come through this, you know, and look good doing so.
Yeah, you can't afford slip-ups because you know, and maybe you expected a world title fight as your next fight. Is that right or not?
Yeah, I thought I'd have had it by now, to be honest with you. I think I wouldn't have become mandatory for it in April, but then I knew Tagaia and Jack were going to fight each other. I just didn't think it'd take from April to January for them to finally, you know, do it. I thought I'd maybe have one keep busy fight and then a world title fight, and then it was two keep busy fights, and then, well, this is my third fight while I've been sitting around waiting for it. But they're fighting January 14th, and the winner's got to fight me after this. So, well, this is my last one before a world title shot. So, you know, I've built them to looking good, and I'll put a bit of a statement out to whoever wins that fight.
Are you quite chilled about it all, Callum, or have you been a little bit frustrated at the same time?
A bit of both. I was chilled at the start because I kind of knew it was going to happen. I knew they were going to fight each other, so I knew I was going to have to wait a bit longer than I wanted to. But it, only the last few months has been a bit frustrating because it's took longer than I thought it would have. So I thought when in April when they said they wanted to box, I thought he'd box September time, and I'd have probably boxed the winner about now, where it's looking like it's going to be maybe April, May time. So it's just, I was happy to wait, but I've been made to wait a bit longer than I'd have liked. So a bit of both. I knew I was going to do it, but it's been a bit frustrating.
What's the wise head behind the scenes in terms of Joe Gallagher been saying about it all to you, though?
Just stay in the gym, keep improving. No matter whether it was my next fight or three fights time, I have to be ready when the chance comes. So I stayed in the gym, and I've kept busy. And although my fights haven't been at the level, a world title level, I've still been in the gym for, you know, three camps in the meantime, and I'll get world-class barring in my gym and stuff. And I do feel I've improved as a fighter over the last year, so when I do give me shot, I am good enough, and I'll take it with both hands.
Last couple of fights you've had a couple of six-rounders, haven't you? So, if I can say his name right, Nemas Party, I think, yeah, that is, and Cesar, yeah, Reynoso as well. They've gone slightly longer than some of your previous fights. Has that been sort of valuable or beneficial?
Yeah, I think so. I think everyone knows I've had a lot of early fights, and although I lay in the gym, I haven't really learned much of my fights. I think I've had 10 that I've finished in one round, so you don't really learn a lot from it apart from... You know, you gain a lot of confidence from it, but you don't really learn much. So my last few fights, I think they've all gone six rounds, which is longer than, you know, most of the others. So I do feel I've learned from being in the ring. I think if I'd just sat out and not boxed for, you know, since April, then it would have had a more of an effect on my career. So I was happy to, you know, stay active, stay in the gym, and I do feel I've benefited from it.
Because I suppose when you're rising through the levels and you're a fighter like yourself and you're just destroying everyone in front of you, you want to keep doing that, but actually the level of test will start to go up and up and up, and you've got to become more accustomed to a different scenario.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the higher up you go, they're not just going to fall over when you hit them. But they're at the highest level, they take it, and, you know, they give it back just as good as, you know, they take it. So you've got to be prepared for that. I think I've had the Christopher Abrasse fight was a very good learning fight for me. I've had a lot of knockouts, and I hit him with, and he took it and kept coming, and I did put him over in the 10th round and thought the fight was done, and he got up and kept coming again, and, you know, it was probably my toughest fight to date. So I think I learned more in that fight than any of the others. So as much as I do enjoy the early rounds, and if you ever get a chance to get someone out in one round, I will take it. I'll never, you know, carry someone just to get some rounds, and I'll always finish it as quick as I can. But it is good, and it is beneficial when you do get the rounds in.
Radio City Talk. The Kickoff with Steve Hothersall. Weekdays from 7 till 11.
Delighted to be joined for the next 50 minutes by the former Tranmere manager and Everton coach, Gary Brabbin. Morning to you, Gary.
Morning.
Great to see you. Thank you very much for coming in. Excellent result for Tranmere last night. Presume you're still sort of watching their results eagerly, just following how they're doing this season. They seem to be on a good course at the moment.
Yeah, no, it was. I think it's a good point. For us, Karina started really well, and you know it was always going to be a tough game. But you know, I think it was a good point, especially you know they'll want to have bounced back from a disappointing result on Saturday. So yeah, I think it was a good point for them.
For yourself, and obviously you know your involvement with Tranmere Rovers, you've had a few months away from it now. Have you sort of as the pressure released a little bit from your shoulders? Did it feel a pressurised environment or not?
I think any job that you're in, you put yourself under pressure, you know, because you set your own standards, and so you're always under a bit of pressure. But I think it's a pressure that you don't really realise until it's gone. So it's you know that little bit of you know probably day to day excitement and you know putting that bit of pressure on yourself to achieve what you wanted to do every day. You know, I certainly missed that.
How do you look back at it now? The time you had there.
I enjoyed it. It was good. It was, you know, it was a real good experience. I certainly don't regret taking the job. I'm obviously disappointed that, you know, we'd agreed a 2-year. It was an agreement for 2 years, which, you know, we were well on course for achieving everything that we'd set the goals. And so, from that point of view, you know, I'm disappointed that I've not been able to finish the job. But, you know, I certainly look.
Is that a personal thing, do you think?
In terms of what?
Not being able to finish the job. Do you look at it and think, I could have completed that?
Well, no, I mean...
Is it personal frustration or is it...
I think in this day and age, I think it's very... You know, from my point of view, yes, we've been... You know, one of the things we wanted to improve on last season was the home form, which we'd done, you know, and we hadn't been beat away from home. And it was my last two games, if you like, my last two defeats... Our last three games in charge were all away from home. We lost one, drew one and lost one. So, you know, them two defeats were the only two defeats we'd had in 11 months away from home. So from that point of view, it's disappointing. You want a little bit of support at times like that. But, you know, what's happened. You know, you look at jobs and not too many times are you getting relieved or from your duties when you're fourth in the league and 4 points off the top of the league?
Yeah, that looks strange at the time, doesn't it? I don't know. I mean, you stand back and you look at it, and it doesn't massively make sense that amount of point. You know, you're so close to the top of the league, but you're leaving your job at the same time. I suppose that's what I was digging at when I was saying, was it a frustrating situation as well?
Yeah, it was, because it was the best start in the club's history. Best clubs, you know. I was still the current manager of the month as well, so. You know, I think when I come out, it was all the rumours of have you had an argument, and we hadn't. You know, I think from a personal point of view, you know, I think I got on with the chairman. You know, that was, you know, that there was no, certainly no issue with that. But I think, you know, he probably had his frustrations. I certainly had mine, and I think in the end, he's decided to go a different route. Which again, that's the bit where I feel frustrated, because you know we'd agreed. A 2-year project, if you like, which I was confident we were certainly on course to achieve our goal of getting back in the Football League.
Do you think football clubs are too eager these days to sort of move on quickly from, you know, they'll appoint someone, won't they? And before you know it, they've made a different decision, different direction. It's not just individual clubs. It seems like a mass culture of this now.
Yeah, I think you've got certainly a lot of, there's a lot more pressure now, I think, on managers. But I think clubs need to be more transparent with the fans. You know, fans seem to be heard a lot more now with, you know, with social media, etc. And I think clubs need to, you know, sort of be a bit more transparent, be realistic. You know, give the manager a chance by saying, look, these are our aims, these are our ambitions, this is our realistic goal, this is what we expect. You know, we all want the same thing, but where we are now, you know, and I think that'd certainly help a lot of managers. You know, and it goes the other way as well. You look at managers who, you know, they've had real bad times, but you know, it seems to go on and go on.
They've stayed too long.
Yeah, so I think you know it certainly works both ways. But I think most of the time, in them cases, it's the strength of the contract.
Radio City Talk. Rock, sport, and talk for Liverpool. The Kickoff with Steve Hothersall.